on Nonproductive, we are all about geek culture, and you don't get deeper into geek culture than the cinematic masterpiece that is Mazes and Monsters. So today on film, we're going to talk about that movie, that made-for-TV movie starring Tom Hanks that was from the 80s.
1982.
You know it. You know it, because this is the movie that probably, if anything made your parents not let you play Dungeons & Dragons, it may very well have been this movie. It's just going to be Pete, Pope, Al, and me, Frank, on this episode. And oh my lord, it was... I've never seen this movie, or at least I haven't seen it in decades.
This movie does stuff to your brain.
Just a little background for those of you. I assumed everyone knew what we were talking about. That's perhaps unfair. There is a legendary movie that happened during a legendary period in geek culture. In the early 80s, the Satanic Panic was running amok. It hit heavy metal music. It definitely hit, like, comic books, and 100% it hit gaming. Tabletop gaming at that point was just beginning to emerge. What was, like, D&D was 76, 77, something like that. It was, like, late 70s. So it was just becoming a big, major thing, and suddenly there was this legend, this rumor, that if you played D&D or if you let your kids play D&D, they would end up going insane, believing that they are their characters, and then dying in a sewer somewhere while they're pretending to play.
And then that's where the book came about, right?
Yeah, so do you actually, let's take a moment to figure it out. I definitely heard this story growing up. I remember this tape being passed around at conventions, like, you have to watch this, and that's probably, only seen segments of this Tom Hanks movie that's totally against gaming. What about the Pete, let's go with you, since we're close to the same age. Do you remember this as well?
I never actually saw it or heard anything directly of it, but I was absolutely verboten from playing or even thinking about anything related to Dungeons and Dragons.
That's crazy and to me. It's amazing.
It was amazing that it was that specific. It's like Dungeons and Dragons is the devil thing. Like, I was 100% allowed to play with He-Man.
Right. GURPS is fine. Dungeons and Dragons, no. Oh, what? So you didn't actually hear about it. You didn't specifically hear
about
this.
Yeah, I never heard or saw Mazes and Monsters as a kid.
Al, I think you've seen it. You saw it back in the day as
well. Yeah, I saw it when I was in college, actually, oddly enough. When I first started playing Dungeons and Dragons and stuff.
So it had the opposite effect. People, gamers were sharing it as in, you got to get part of this.
You got to see this. This is really like, Tom Hanks is in this movie. Like, oh man, I got to see it then.
Tom Hanks is in this movie. Did you ever get, like, a bar against role-playing when you were younger, or that never hit you?
No, that never really hit. Like, I think, A, because when I was young, it was just not something that came up. Like, the worst that ever came up was, oh, that's that thing that the real nerds do. Like, that was that was sort of something that came up once or twice, but
it was... That has evolved. Now, a couple of years ago, it was LARP. LARP became the thing. Like, hey, I role-play, but I don't LARP. And now it's, I don't know, probably...
Warhammer,
I guess.
Fortnite.
Well, that's just the 1% plays Warhammer. That's it, 1%. How about you, Pope?
I had never heard of this movie before, you know, watching it the other day to review. And my mother forbade me from playing Dungeons and Dragons, but not for, you know, the satanic reasons. But she was worried that it was, like, too inundated into a nerd culture that I would never,
You're never going to leave the house.
I would never know the touch of another person because I played Dungeons and Dragons.
Makes sense. I am so happy, first of all, that our parents are full of bigotry, but also that I was able to get three people who are, people who are completely new to this to watch this, there's no better word for it, film. It was a made-for-TV film, not a made-for-TV movie. Again, all right, so basic setup is that there is a college Dungeons and Dragons group, not Dungeons and Dragons, they call it Mazes and Monsters. Their tabletop role-playing game is called Mazes and Monsters.
It's not copywritten.
Yes, and this college group gets together to play, and some unusual personalities come to play this game who are perhaps not quite mature enough or stable enough to handle the responsibilities of pretending to be elves.
Yeah.
That's it. That's the movie.
It's so much happens in this movie, but also nothing at all, if that makes any sense.
Yes.
Like, that really is yes. his spell. So
except much. When he maybe kills a guy.
But, there is that. He does almost kill a person. But even that is so towards the end, you're like, I don't even care anymore. Just do something.
I think it's because, you know, like, it's really done in the style of, like, high school AV club, where it's, like, all wide shots. Like, you think they probably just did one take and moved on from everything. It's just so one and done kind of thing.
Yeah. I don't understand what you mean by nothing happens. I mean, we watch them building their own paper miniatures.
Uh-huh.
A kid invents LARPing.
Yes, yeah. It literally happens in this movie.
Like, and no one ever had that idea before, this kid.
So bad. All right, so this movie was based on a cult phenomenon. The book, which I own, Mazes and Monsters, I've never read it. But it was like a big thing, and of course it spawned what was the, you know, genre spanning franchise of the day, a made-for-TV movie starring Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
There are some interesting characters in this, some faces that are familiar, but like vaguely, so everything is got like that thin 70s haze on it. I know it was early 80s, but like just leftover still, 70s yeah. haze, where it's like, what is this? Why does it feel like there's Vaseline on the lens every time there's a romantic scene? Why are they playing Dungeons and Dragons by candlelight?
Candlelight's the thing that got me the most, because it was like there were so many candles.
So many candles! They like flip a switch. There's too many candles. Too many candles.
Like, yeah. At some point, guys, this is a fire hazard. The ambiance is not worth it.
I mean, if it was really from the 70s, they didn't care about fire hazards, though.
Also,
but on a practical level, it's damn near impossible to read pencil-written notes on a character sheet just by candlelight.
Not to mention, you're going to take like 6 hours in each session. How do you have the time to light those candles?
Yeah, right?
There's also this weird...
Some robust candles. How do they afford robust candles like that as college students?
In fact, there's this very weird scene where the hat kid, who like is always wearing a different hat...
JJ. Yeah, JJ.
Like sees like something glowing at the bottom of like a pit, and is like, oh, I'm going to jump in, and how much treasure do I get? Just sort of offhandedly. And like, you just die. Like, I'm like, that... What?
Yeah.
None of, like, and then everyone's really upset. Like, oh,
fallen. Yeah.
Oh, we can't. Oh, you died. Like, well, yeah, that happens sometimes. And like,
roll up a new character, dude.
And, like, oh, it'll take him forever to get back to level. Like, or you could just make one at level 9. It's possible.
There's a lot to be said. Like, as a gamer who has once you get a lot of experience as a tabletop gamer, and you look at this movie, and you're willing to put aside all the like the satanic panic and the fear mongering, you're like, you know, I don't appreciate this gameplay style. The GM is the absolute deciding factor in roles.
No, he's not.
There's no player agency in this game. You're like, wait, no,
absolutely,
yeah,
that is true. But also, like, there is no like the GM isn't like he's. The maze controller doesn't control things because he could just say, oh, Free looks fine. But he's like, no, you died. It happens. Yeah. And I'm like, all right.
There's too much player agency in this game.
I have to agree with the maze controller on that one.
Oh, God.
That was just
deep in the
that was just a dumb way. Kid just jumps into the pit without even looking.
I'm actually willing to bet, like, maybe he did that intentionally because he wanted to pitch everybody the LARP.
Oh, interesting.
Like, he was like, oh, I died. Well, you know what we could do instead, guys? I propose we go play in a cave.
Yeah. So basically, it's the group that we start off with in a desperate attempt to kind of get some sort of consistency to this damn movie. JJ is the first character we run into. He actually seems like he's the character who might be the central focus. He's the one He's the first one we were introduced to. He's younger than the rest of the college students. Like, he was accelerated or something.
I think he's like 15 years old.
Yeah, something like that.
He's a sophomore in.
Yeah,
he has an eccentric home life. His mom keeps changing his room.
Which is weird.
A Maya bird for some reason that is barely in the movie. And he is part of a D&D group with Daniel and Kate, who are two college freshmen, I'm going to guess. Mm-hmm. Maybe, you know, college students who are...
They're attending college.
Yes. And I can't remember the name of the college, but I at one point I did write it down and start laughing. I don't remember why it was. It was an ordeal watching this, but a good ordeal. Like, I was glad I did it.
Yeah.
But, oh my God, why did I do it? So these three are part of a D&D group, or I keep saying that, part of a role playing club, Mazes and Monsters group. And they are looking for a fourth, because I think somebody has dropped out of their game, or perhaps dropped out of college, or maybe they're just looking for another person to round out their party. We're right.
Killed themselves in the steam tunnels underneath the
possibly
college.
Possibly, just as an opening thing. So I knew that this movie was about somebody who goes crazy playing D&D, and I knew it had Tom Hanks. And I always assumed Tom Hanks was the person going crazy playing D&D. I'm going to just keep calling it D&D. I don't care. Yeah. And I was like, oh, all right, fine. And then while we're watching this movie and JJ is taking the lead with his ridiculous hats, every scene with a new hat, settle down with the hats, I'm like, oh, was I wrong all these years? Was it JJ?
And then he thinks about killing himself for like really random reason for I couldn't tell. Like, oh, we can't play this week. Oh, I guess it's just time to end it all. Like,
yeah, literally crestfallen because people didn't want to play his games that week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think there was a little bit more depth to that one. I'll defend the movie on that.
All right, go for it.
Mostly because I think it's ridiculous that this subplot goes nowhere. Spoiler alert.
Yeah, it really doesn't.
But, no, JJ, they established that he's a 15-year-old kid. He feels isolated. And this is his one social outlet is the gaming group
and being ridiculous at parties with weird
and
hats.
But like he does have that whole party where like he invites people and everybody seems to come.
It's somewhat realistic. I mean, you never know why somebody is. I can't believe I'm defending this movie. You never know why somebody is experiencing mental stress and what have you. To Pete's point, the fact I'm watching this, I'm going, I guess I was wrong. I always assumed Tom Hanks was the weird guy, the kid with the problem in this movie.
Yep.
But, you know, he was just the most popular name. That's why people associated it, whatever, yada, yada, yada. And I'm watching it. And then JJ's problems miraculously get resolved when he invents a LARP by finding the tunnels that are like on campus, like these
the
natural caves.
Just off campus.
Right. Yeah. So
that are forbidden.
Forbidden.
And if you go into the forbidden caves, you will be expelled.
That's why. It's,
which
that's,
is the most serious consequence any college student can ever face.
Yeah, I don't think they ever expressly say you will die. It's just, these are expel caves. Do not enter the expel caves.
Can we also touch on the fact, before we leave it up, the fact that they really just start enabling Tom Hanks like he like is a recovering heroin addict. Like the way they were like, seriously, he's like, I had to stop playing the game. I failed out of school. And they're like, no, man, you got to play again. This is great. Oh, yeah, you need it.
It is really like disconcerting because it's very much is like, no, I don't want to do this. I really honestly just like, I'm nice meeting you all. I hope to keep socializing. But like, I really can't. It's became too much of my life.
It's one of two places in this movie where I'm like, this is pretty accurate to gaming right now. The first one is that you've experienced a person who's like, I really shouldn't be gaming because it's affected my academics, right? That I'm like, yeah, I know that guy.
Yeah.
And I want him in my group now. You have to come.
The second part was the musical partners with the small gaming group sharing that's deciding like, oh, we broke up, but now we're dating. And I'm like, yeah, that's pretty accurate.
Ooh, that is scarily accurate.
Yeah. But
I'm constantly realizing that I'm JJ in this damn situation.
So JJ, he finds the Cave of Expellment and he sets up his LARP. And suddenly, he is cured of his mental illness, or at least of his depression, or what have you.
His melancholy.
It's effectively his ennui, because it's not like it's treated maturely at all.
I don't know that he's cured of it. They just never mention it again. Right. And he never does anything.
So, yeah.
And he never says, I'm feeling better, I don't want to kill myself anymore.
Nope, never comes up.
Not till the end, I guess.
And then Tom Hanks completely deteriorates, even though he was doing very well. He was enjoying the role-playing game, and he had a girlfriend. They seem to be enjoying each other's company, more or less.
There was that weird one scene, though, where he shows her the larger bed in the dorm.
Yeah.
That was like, it's like that weird, awkward scene of taking the relationship a step too far kind of moment. Like
she didn't want to move in with him. Is that
it was a very weird scene. Like that kind of constitutes a lot of moments, not just in their relationship, but in like a lot of their interactions.
The thing that haunts me about this movie, and there are plenty, is that I was told this is a film that makes gaming evil. And it really feels like gaming is just incidental to all the other deep emotional problems these characters had.
If anything, this is a film about like, hey, be better parents, guys.
Yeah.
Like the parents are terrible in this film.
I also think
gaming kind of removes your repressions, I guess, and brings stuff to the surface is the message of the movie. Yeah.
I suppose if it weren't for role-playing games, these guys would just have repressed all their emotional anxieties forever and have been fine.
I think the movie's intended message is that role-playing games are evil. but it's not the message that it succeeds in delivering.
No, in fact, there's a few positives that we'll get to later on in the plot that, like, I kind of want to hit on.
Sure. But I guess what's important is in his first day after breakup, possibly, if I'm remembering the timeline right, he breaks up with a girlfriend, Tom Hanks.
Yeah, he has the delusion, Robbie, in the cave.
And then, which one comes first?
No, the cave comes first. He has the delusion there, wow, where he thinks he slaves the Gourville. And then he goes and has, like, a dream.
Prophetic dream.
Oh, man, we're missing the whole plot line with the brother that he talks about.
He mentions one of the stress points he has. Robbie, who's Tom Hanks' character, basically has a brother that has gone missing and is presumed dead.
Yeah, he ran away, essentially.
He ran away to New York City at some point, and no one has heard from him since. And it's caused Robbie a lot of emotional stress, a lot of guilt. Because
he says, like, if I had said something, or maybe like anything that would have like kept him there, you know. And
there's elements of like an interesting story here, but it gets this, the window dressing of it makes it so confounding. So he's in the cave. Robbie's in the cave with the rest of his friends, and then he has that nervous breakdown when he thinks he kills this big monster. They're basically like, never take this guy to a haunted hayride. Because it was effectively haunted hayride level special effects, skeletons on wires and things like that, and he goes complete psychotic break.
Beware the sacrilege.
And he tries to play it off like it's like game element. He's like, oh yeah, I killed the monster, and they're all like, yeah, woo, we did it. And no one's thinking about the fact that he literally had a conniption.
He had cold sweats.
Yeah.
He was freaking out, and everybody was like, wow, he's really into this. No, he is having an episode. He goes full psychotic at a haunted hayride.
Yeah.
So I guess denial is also another strong message of this movie. Just keep denying everything and it'll be okay.
It'll be fine. Well, I guess so. I mean, Robbie's mom is definitely... I want to talk just briefly. We only see them in the very beginning and very end of the movie. Robbie's parents, who drive him to New College, because he got expelled from his old college, presumably not for anything involving caverns, but like just bad GPA.
Yeah.
So Robbie's parents, Tom Hanks' parents, are definitely 100% the parents from Who's Afraid of Virginia Woolf. They are just bickering drunks who are angry. It's Who's Afraid of Gary Gygax.
Yeah.
That's what we're experiencing in the car.
She's an admitted alcoholic. She just sits there and is like, I drink because I don't want to have to deal with you. Like, just, like, looks right at the husband. I'm like, and, like, wow, buddy, I'd fold myself into RPGs, too.
Yeah, definitely, you need an escape.
Tom Hanks' mom is played by Anne Francis.
Yes, why? How? How did this happen?
And I feel like, you know, the fact that she's kind of a degenerate alcoholic kind of makes it hard to believe her character at the end of the movie, and, you know, like, when she tries to offer that moment of forgiveness, and I'm like... No, most mothers there would probably be choking the three of them in turns.
I guess so, but also, like, she's, like, very happy with the almost catatonic state her son's in, which is, that tracks with who she was at the beginning.
No, it does. Like, it's, like, she has nothing to worry about. She knows exactly what he's going to be like for the rest of rest of the life. Like, it's, like, there's nothing to concern anymore. Like, it's, like, oh, okay, this is who our life is now. This tragedy has brought us better together, and you know what? Hey, now we're a family again. It's great.
Well, the father's not around.
I was going to say, I'm assuming the father is now living with his mistress.
Yeah, probably.
She got a lot in that divorce, especially considering that what happened to the son. I imagine she made out like a bandit in that divorce.
Yeah, it really is a baffling movie. For so many different reasons. The scene where they're attempting to... I know that we're bouncing all around. It doesn't matter. The scene where they're attempting to recruit a fourth for their gaming group. JJ puts up a bulletin on the bulletin board. And his plan was what? To monitor the bulletin board? He just sits in the library watching.
Cafeteria.
Cafeteria. It was a cafeteria they were eating. So strange. Yeah.
And then he invites Robbie to the party that's to celebrate someone's birthday? Who is it? It's a celebrity.
Was it Brigitte Bardot?
Yeah, it
was some actress.
Yeah, it was Brigitte Bardot, and like, he's like, is she going to be there? No, why would she be there? Like, buddy, I'm not, I don't know. This is weird.
Why did a movie like this feel the need to throw, like, red herrings out? Because I was, like, 100% convinced that I got that JJ was the problem.
I feel like that kind of adds to the bad filmmaking of the whole movie, where there's just, they don't know how to write the conclusion of anything they introduce into the plot at all, where it's, you know, like, why is the bird there? Why does his suicide problem magically go away? How does Tom Hanks get a knife?
I'm actually going to go ahead and say, like, yeah, that was confusing. I will go ahead and say, I think I may have pegged what the thing is here. I think in their attempt to try and paint gaming as like this satanic panic thing, like as the story was being made, they had to think of how do we give our characters agency and how do we make them like boil over and have issues? Because when they actually sat down and thought about it, like the game itself doesn't really do anything. Like, so they had to like come up with whatever they could, and they just threw whatever was in the basket at the story so that like these people would, you know, break down or do something because the game just wasn't going to cut it.
I think you're giving the writers way too much credit for thinking in
just,
this.
There's a bunch of stuff they piece together. The back
I don't think they know the word agency.
The back half of this movie really does lose all pacing at some point. And I'm just like, what is happening? What? How much? Days passed? Months?
Days, definitely.
What is going on?
Where's the school located again? Because I was like, okay, he's in New York. How far away is that?
Yeah, I could not figure out where in New York he was.
I assumed it was he was in college at Pennsylvania. I don't know if they said that at one point or if I just assumed that, but that's where I
know. No, I'm pretty sure.
I was thinking like upstate New York a little bit.
Yeah, I also pictured upstate New York. There was an establishing shots of New York early on because I remarked that, wow, 70s New York was really empty. And then at some point
they just gave filming permits for 5 a.m.
That's also probably very, very accurate. And then I don't remember what, like, it's just, so at some point when Robbie has his nervous breakdown and it's clear that he's the one who is the object of concern in this film, I can't even say main character, I realize, I'm like, first thing, I was like, why are the cops the enemies in this? Why are they the bad guys? Why aren't you going to the authorities for help about your crazy friend?
Because they could get expelled,
right,
for being in the cage.
But not only that, like, but they are kind of like useless in this movie. Like, it doesn't paint police officers in a very good light. Even our introductory kind of Twilight Zone duder, who shows up and, like, says his whole shtick about Mazes and Monsters is a far-out game. Like,
yeah, I love that line.
Even
yeah.
He is kind of, like, a little not helpful.
I'm really digging hard here. Who is not useless in this movie? Like, who serves any kind of purpose besides the homeless sage guy in the sewer?
The Mina Bird successfully accomplishes bird stuff, I guess.
Yeah, I guess.
It's hard to say because it's hard to know what their objectives are. I think that, you know, like, JJ does a good job of showing a really concerned, like, damaged young person who maybe shouldn't be left at his own devices, but then eventually the film drops him as a...
Yeah.
But the homeless guy is the only one who pushes the plot along. Like, everybody else just kind of, like, swims there, and the homeless guy points him to the Twin Tower.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think Robbie does a pretty good job of accomplishing goals that he sets for himself.
It's fair.
Like, stopping having sex and finding jumping the Twin off Towers. A building.
Experimenting with piety.
Oh, wait, hold on. Guys, like, we're missing a whole point where they make, like, Tolkien references in this movie.
Without referring to Tolkien. Like, nobody seems to have any idea who Tolkien is.
I thought they did make a Lord of the Rings, like, actual, like, say, Lord of the Rings at some point in this movie. Maybe I'm wrong. I don't remember. But I definitely feel like, besides just the two towers, and that, I thought they did actually reference, oh, man, he's talking about that book.
Mm.
Like,
so at one point or other, when we discover that the most frightening monsters are the ones in our minds, also a line from the movie, I'm like, all right, they're in New York, and he's gone missing, and we don't know where he is, but they keep mentioning, like, because they basically have assumed, so here's another thing where his party is maybe helpful, they assume that Robbie is trying to find something that's in their role-playing game and matches up with their map of the world.
Yeah, like, he draws this map that they all discover and, like, yeah. Wow.
I love that their first instinct is, hey, he's trying to do his own game.
Again, that may be the third thing that's very accurate in the college gaming groups, getting all resentful about who's running their own game.
I thought we were the only person he gamed with.
So, in this game, if I recall, there are two towers that they have, like, in the middle of the world of Pardue.
And I really, really was disappointed that there was just, like, oh, it's just the Twin Towers of New York City.
I'm
like,
oh,
how
my
was that
Lord.
Not obvious, guys?
No, so, first of all, I as soon as they were like, well, where is he going in the great world of Pardue? Well, there are these two towers in the middle of the, and I'm like, you mother. You son of... How can no one have told me this in the last 20 years? No one thought it was like, hey, by the way, you know Mazes and Monsters? A protracted scene happens in the Twin Towers of New York City. Never mentioned by anyone.
How are there not, like thousands of conspiracies about this movie with relation to the Twin Towers? How?
So, effectively, this movie is about, brainwashing a white person into Al-Qaeda, right? That's a reading of this film.
That's one way of looking at it, sure.
I describe that as an incorrect reading, but...
But he definitely...
A reading.
He does find a faith, and then does become celibate. And thinks mm-hmm. it's best to
yeah
becomes ridiculously attached to that faith.
Yeah, it tracks. Come
sacrifice
on, give
for
me this
great
one.
Power. Yeah.
Give me this. I have this one note in my notes that I don't remember anymore. Why is he bringing the bird? Oh, JJ, when they're on the mad dash, when they finally figure out that Robbie's in New York, he brings his bird. No reason.
Doesn't make sense.
Well, because somebody needs to feed Merlin.
I think it goes back to our point of, a lot of this movie tracks in people going, hey, nerds do these things, so let's put it in the movie.
They have weird pets like birds, right? They don't drive cars, they drive motorbikes. That's a nerd thing.
Yeah, actually, yeah. Birds are probably the weirdest pet. We have a quick round table on this? What is the weirdest pet that, weirdest conventional pet?
Oh, conventional pet?
Yeah, one you could go to,
lizard,
like,
probably?
Is that weird?
I would probably say lizard.
Or tarantula?
Sugar glider, because they poop on you.
But they're not conventional.
They're not super conventional. I would say, if by phylum, I would say bird. Mm. But you're right. Bird people are weird. Bird people are the weirdest people. Not cat or dog people. Those people are
fine. Because at least there's some cool factor to a lizard. But a bird, it's kind of this weird, it doesn't really interact with you. It just kind of squawks and makes noise. Mm. And it requires you to clean up after it a lot.
Do you hear the birds right
now? Yeah, they're wow, buddy, really thanks a lot.
There are literally birds chirping in the studio right now.
I guess equally is weird, though, because they also poop on you.
Yeah, that too.
Right, same thing. If you have opinions about this, write us angry letters, because we will print them.
I think people who are super into fish.
But I feel
just
the
having
decorative.
Casual fish where they're...
There's a line.
You know, they're just sitting there, you said, decorative.
No Troy McClure obsession with fish. We can't go that way.
No, not that way.
We don't want to analyze that.
But anyway, yeah, but weird pets was definitely a thing for nerds.
Robbie kills a guy.
Yeah.
Robbie kills a guy. I mean,
in self-defense.
Allegedly.
That gang member who attacks him really did throw himself onto the blade that for some reason Robbie is now carrying. But yeah, he killed a guy.
And probably the most emotional part of the movie of me laughing my butt off at Tom Hanks crying on the phone. That was probably the funniest part of the movie.
I hate to say it. It was really funny and really dumb, but I think it's the most acting that was done in that entire film.
Oh, yeah. No,
Hanks sells it as best as he can.
I think it was exactly the same level of distraught as when he lost Wilson in Castaway.
There was a lot. For some reason, I kept thinking about Castaway in this movie. I don't know why. Something about maybe the way he runs poorly. He runs. Tom Hanks runs really weird.
Yeah.
Watch it.
Worse than Tom Cruise?
No. Tom Cruise runs amazingly. That's why he has it in his contract. I must run all places.
It is really hard to run and look appropriate on film. Because, think about it, how cool Steven Seagal looks. And if you see him run in real life, he looks like a girl. Sorry, no, that's mean. That's wrong. Yeah. That's inappropriate. He runs discoordinated.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I would. I think what's odd about that is that Steven Seagal looks cool.
That's why on screen you have to skip.
Yes.
Yeah.
That, if you skip, that's when you look like you're
my
wrong.
Favorite part
energy.
About the movie, if we're going right to that, it's the fact that no one in New York City gave a damn about Robbie. If you look at that scene where he's walking around dressed as a priest or a cleric, whatever they called him in this, no one is making any kind of look at him. No eye contact.
No, he's dressed normally, I thought.
He was passable.
He has a coin pouch.
He did have a coin pouch. That was weird.
Yeah.
But he also did... He also was covered in blood. That happened.
Nobody gave a damn.
New York City.
Nobody looked at him.
New York City.
So good. So good. My favorite part.
Well, let's talk about, we talked about JJ, we talked about Robbie. Do we want to touch on the other two characters who, I guess, are characters?
They're characters. I forgot their names.
Daniel isn't really a character.
Daniel's weird.
Daniel's, Fred from Scooby-Doo.
He is, and he has the same hairstyle as well.
All right, he's definitely Fred. We call him Fred for the rest of this.
He provides the motivation for the second funniest part of the movie when, what's her name? I can't remember any names.
Kate
turns to him after the Tom Hanks thing. She's like, oh, I was always so afraid to go after you because you're so good-looking. And I'm like, watching the movie,
also
like,
that,
can't myself.
There's also that really weird scene with JJ where he's just like, oh, man, I just kind of want a girlfriend. But, you know, like, I have this reputation now. Now it's just, you know, it's one night stands all the time. I'm like, who are you? Fred, like, where were you going with this?
Daniel slash Fred was really like, you know what? They it's so weird. This movie, like, teases a background for all these characters that you're like, this would be interesting if you build out. This would be interesting if you build out. But they don't.
No. Flat out refuse to build anything out.
And what's her name? Kate? Or, I keep forgetting.
Kate.
It's
still Kate.
Who has, like, this weird, like, oh, man, I can't write about life until I've actually lived it. I'm like,
that is also incredibly accurate for a college-age writer to be like, you know, smoking clothes in the parking lot. I don't really know life. I just sort of know about life.
But you know what? So, I could pretend to be a fighter.
Yeah.
I guess, like, we're doing nothing but selling our point of how she just blends in the background while none of us can remember her name because she's just so bland and forgettable.
There are a lot of... There's just, like, it's hard to think of any of them as characters because generally a character has, like, elements to them, a background, an arc. Something happens to them in the story that changes them in some way.
I just figured it out.
All right.
Like, all of these people, they're actually part of a different RPG where you play as college students playing mazes and monsters.
These are poorly designed RPG characters.
Yep. Because how often does that happen when you're playing, like, one of these tabletop RPG characters where even unintentionally you make a character with, like, a kind of interesting background that you never really touch on.
Yeah, you never fill it out. It hangs there indefinitely.
And
yeah,
things just kind of happen throughout the campaign until eventually you get to the end and save your friend. And like, well, I guess that's close enough.
Yeah,
you
we
almost
can't keep
have the illusion of agency.
Yes, that's it. That's it.
Can we talk for a hot second about the cast?
Sure.
Though, because I'm blown away at the people that you recognize in this movie.
Yeah.
I mean, let's forget about Tom Hanks. We all know Tom Hanks.
Yep.
But when Kate was played by Wendy Crewson, who you may remember as the mom from the Tim Allen Santa Claus movies.
Oh, God.
Ah. Yep. That I remembered.
JJ was played by Chris Makepeace, who you may remember from the teen sex romp Meatballs.
Idea.
And the 80s vampire film Vamp.
No, I don't remember Vamp at all. Was that the one with...
That was the
Jim
one.
Carrey?
No, that was the one with Grace Jones.
Okay.
As the weird stripper vampire thing.
Okay.
Of course.
A very weird movie. We already talked about Anne Francis playing Tom Hanks' mom.
Mm-hmm.
And the one that blew me away was Kevin Peter Hall played the Gorville.
Wow.
Kevin Peter Hall was Harry in Harry and the Hendersons.
Forgot about that.
Wow.
And the Predator and Predator 2, the Predator in Predator and Predator 2.
Oh my God.
And was scheduled to play Super Shredder in Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, but he unfortunately passed away before that movie was filmed.
And then they used footage of this movie to fill in the gaps.
No.
Jeez.
No, they did eventually cast professional wrestler Kevin Nash.
I like how that became a trend after that, though.
Casting professional wrestlers?
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's like because Kevin Nash fit the suit.
There you go. Good job, Kevin Nash. But oh my gosh, though. Like, yeah, there was a surprising amount of, like, decent actors and actresses in this film.
Yeah, the performances were okay. They ranged from okay to good. There are moments where they try. They really do try.
Yeah.
The character of Harold, who I think was Tom Hanks' dad. Played Mulder's dad on The X-Files.
Oh, wow. All right.
Talk about typecast.
Peter Donnett.
Wow.
But just, there was nothing to string anything together in this movie. It's just, nothing pays off. Nothing really happens. Nobody learns anything. They just
I don't know about that. I mean, I think they kind of learn, like, we're told that they learn things, even though they don't actually do it.
Oh, yeah. And the police lieutenant was the mayor from Jaws.
Yeah, that was that the that
Murray
was the,
Hamilton.
That was the
and Jaws too. Don't
I'm like this guy.
Yes.
All he does is show up and say, "I don't know about doing this." It's yeah. It's awesome.
But I all right, going on to like all right. So Robbie's in New York and they're trying to look for him. They in a weird scene actually like their gaming knowledge pays off because they're like, "Well, we're gonna use all of our cool gaming skills to find out where Robbie is because the cops can't do it." And it's like,
on this map, I pointed out every place a holy man could visit. What? What are you saying? Every place in New York a holy man would visit. What are you even saying?
Yep. But it's just so weird. But at the same time, it's like, wait, guys, I thought you were against the gaming. Now the gaming is the good thing? It's helping them find him? What's going on?
Oh,
like,
yeah. The
and the cops are incompetent?
It doesn't, actually, though, because, you know, he didn't go to any of the places that a holy man would visit.
But they did find out the Two Towers thing, and they did figure out all the other stuff. And, like, they there was some
Wait,
they did
saw,
figure out he was in New York,
They
though.
Saw that he made a note about the Two Towers in New York, and...
No, figured out
that he was talking
Maybe
about the World Trade Center.
No. They had to figure out he went to New York, though.
That accomplishment was... is erased by the amount of time it took them to achieve it.
I mean, yeah. Fair, but also, I'm just saying, they 100% like did use gaming knowledge to save the day.
No, they did not. That wasn't like her experience as a ranger had her thinking, you know, if I look for clues, I'll figure this out. No, I think this was just them looking through a schizophrenic man's notes.
The strongest case for your argument there is when they talk him off the ledge by convincing him that he doesn't have enough points to fly.
He doesn't have enough points. That's the reason.
But... You can't. You don't have enough points.
I think that
you don't have enough points.
That destroys his like mental illness too, though, because in hit like it's played as he believes he's there. Like he believes, or rather, he believes he's truly that the cleric or whatever.
Absolutely.
Yeah. But and then it's like, oh, game master, and you're like, oh. And then he has like this like eyes on glass moment of clarity, and you're like, oh. But then he completely falls into depravity later.
But he appears to believe that that's how the how that world works.
It's very confusing because like, does he believe he's in that world or does he believe that he is actually playing in that world? Like that, there's a line there that only a person who wasn't just described what D&D was 5 minutes ago before they sat down to write this book would question.
Mm. I think it's that he just kind of fugue states.
Like, sure.
I think that's kind of what it is. Because he's like, how did I get up here? What's going on? I think that he, like, drifts back from... Like, not that he's multiple personality disorder. I don't think that's what it is. I think it is more schizophrenia than anything else. He just all of a sudden thinks, oh, I gotta go do this thing in this world. And every once in a while he'll snap out of it and be like, what? How did I get here? I don't remember doing this. This is really weird. And, yeah, I think that that's more akin to where he's at mentally as opposed to just kind of, like... I don't know anything else, but it is weird that like they talk him off the ledge and there's that payoff of like, oh, he's going to be fine. He's back to normal. Then immediately we cut to the farm, for lack of a better term, where he's just gone.
Yeah, there's nothing. Like, they took away his chance of jumping off a building. But other than that, will he drown himself in a lake? Probably. This guy
He seems oddly happy. He's kind of like, I have this really interesting...
He found something that works for him.
Yeah.
I mean, good for him.
I think it makes sense that none of his friends seem to understand the idea of a psychologist.
Yeah.
Or mother.
Because Kate talks about, well, he's got to keep seeing that doctor.
Yeah.
Well, it's like, back in the 80s, understand. They didn't want to say those names.
Like, oh, he'll be back next semester, it'll be fine. And then they meet him, like, oh, maybe not. Like, it's interesting how he interacts, and he seems, like, better than when they saw him, which is weird to say. Like, he seems sure of himself.
Yeah, he's in a good place. He's in a good place with his mental illness.
Like, I'm not saying that, but, like, it's this weird, happy, scary, where it's like...
It's exactly, he's in a good place with his mental illness. I'm not saying that's a thing that makes sense, but this movie gave up. It was like, yep, that's it.
He's
that's
fine. He's just like, we're going to go off on this adventure over this lake, and he talks about having this magic coin that just reappears in his pocket every night, and like, he can pay off the innkeeper and his wife.
His parents just put a coin in his pocket every night? Is that what, that's the sad future for... Who's Afraid of Gary Gygax?
I guess.
That's the enabling.
Wow.
And it's just, I don't know, maybe that's what
they're
the doctor...
They're feeding into it, because he makes him believe the magic is real, because it's so awful.
And then the friends do it too, but there's that weird, like, again, I can't stress this enough how many weird scenes, but there's that moment when they're on their way there, and they all kind of are talking about, like, hey, guess what I'm doing now? Well, I'm directing the theater groups over at college. Oh, I've got my book coming out. We all have lives now. Yeah.
Remember how we destroy
something called Snapple.
You know how we destroy that one kid's life who answered our advertisement in the cafeteria bulletin board?
And
wait, which year?
Refusing? Oh, my Lord. Wow.
Let's not forget that it is implied that they've done this before.
Yes.
Yeah.
We saw nothing but the death of hope in this movie. It's really sad.
It's such a dark film
in a way that we were told this was an anti-gaming movie, and I'm watching this, and I don't think it's because I'm a gamer. I'm watching this, I'm going like, you know, it feels like the real villainy is everything else you're doing.
Or 1980s society for people not getting help when they have, you know, mental weakness.
Yes, thank God we've stopped doing that.
Yeah.
It says something, I think, that I'm envious of this group for how dedicated they are to playing.
Yeah, oh man, that's the real dream. I mean, if it wasn't the fact that this was a college gaming group, I mean, the fact that they got anybody together regularly to play a game.
Yeah,
it's
like herding cats, guys.
Yeah.
It's not
yeah,
fun.
We couldn't even get in college people together regularly to play.
But I definitely do understand to some extent like that addiction quality of it, because that happens to a certain extent.
Sure.
Like we were talking about it earlier, how you can sort of just fall in and your academics can fall to the wayside. There's times like right after college where it was every other day I'd be like playing something, like Mondays, Wednesdays, Thursdays, and Saturdays, and be just crazy.
That's what happened to me when I used to play Diablo, and like I stopped playing and my cousin like goaded me back in when 3 came out. Like I'm like, dude, I had a problem. He's like, yeah, it's fine.
Did you?
It's 3.
Was it okay when
good.
You returned?
Yeah. Like I don't play games for like 36 hours straight anymore.
Okay, that's good.
Well, that's a good place to stop, I guess.
Oh, I found hope.
Yay!
There are a lot of strings of good in this movie that are like, oh, this is interesting. You could follow up on this, or you could follow up on that. But they refuse to follow up on any of them, and instead, it really did just like, and that's how that ended. The end. That's it.
Yep. That's exactly... Frank described it perfectly. It just kind of ends and says, and that's what happened. Good night, everybody.
That's what happens when you play mazes and monsters.
It's a far-out game.
Even
the RPG itself just kind of fizzles out because they go into the cave, and then the cave fizzles out.
For more information, write to Jack Chick.
Yeah, basically. The movie is pretty much just an hour and a half of people shaming each other for having mental illnesses that are worse than theirs. But it's I have to recommend it because it's you have to watch this.
It's such a
you have to watch.
There will never be another film like this. Like
yeah,
in this
think.
Yeah, in this exact
maybe
same
VR
way.
VR gets really cool, and for some reason young adults don't get into it too. I don't know. It seems like the line between adult and a young adult is gone now. So
I guess it's,
I feel like the way you know how seriously we take this movie, is there like a Riff Trax or MST3K that are like out there somewhere you have to watch with it?
I don't know. What do you think, Al? Do you recommend this film?
I don't. I hate to say this, but like it's a slog. It's unfathomably boring. Like again, it's a movie where everything happens and absolutely nothing does.
Yeah,
the way I watched the movie, like I had to be distracted by something else. So like I feel like you shouldn't watch this movie on your own. You have to watch this movie with someone else.
Oh
and
yeah,
it will be
I
so
did.
Much
oh, that
better.
Was my
yeah,
problem.
Yeah.
I just watched it by myself.
Like if I had somebody else to ping pong stuff off of, it would have been so much better.
Yeah, you're I saw this with John Minus, and I both deeply regret watching it with John Minus, but also it's probably the only way I could have watched it. I watched it with John. I watched it with Iman. Iman was like, what is this? And John is just like, he's psychotic. He's literally psychotic. And it was, what, do you recommend it? Or
oh, yeah, like I said, only with other people. Don't watch it by yourself.
Pete.
I did not enjoy watching this movie the first time. This movie was very difficult to get through for me. But then I actually found it a lot more enjoyable the second time through.
Why the second time?
I don't know. I watched it when we first started talking about doing this.
Mm-hmm.
And then I watched it again because we put it off for so long.
Right.
So if I could make a recommendation to people out there, watch this movie a second time, but don't watch it the first time.
Yeah.
If you can figure out a way to do that, do that.
do it. All right. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. Did we have enough points to make you entertained? If so, like, follow, and subscribe to this network and leave us a 5-star review. That really helps us, find other people who are like us to join our gaming group, who we will eventually alienate to the point they become schizophrenic and wander the streets of New York, possibly killing gang members. We don't know. We don't really follow up with them that far afterwards.
Nah, it's fine.
Let's all go to the lobby to get ourselves a treat.
This has been a Non-Productive Media presentation. Executive producer, Frank Hablawi. This program and many others like it on the Non-Productive Network is distributed under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial No Derivatives license. Please share it, but ask before trying to change it or sell it. For more information, visit non-productive.com.